A very warm welcome to you. This is Remember Palestine. With me, your host, Amina Taylor. Terrified, often isolated, and let down by numerous false promises from the international community. This is just a snapshot of life for Palestinians living under the shadow of settler communities. Often under the protection of the Israeli authorities, Palestinians find themselves unable to turn to anyone for assistance to right this terrible injustice. Can anything be done about this? Despite numerous UN resolutions, the condemnation of nation-states, often supporters of Israel, still the Palestinians at the mercy of whomever fancies their precious land and those scarce resources. We'll be talking about different aspects of this later on in details. But what happens when settlers attack? This report from Ibrahim Husseini.
These images were taken following reports that a group of armed settlers had attacked a shepherdman from the village of Yanun in the northern occupied Palestinian territories. We were told the shepherdman was tending to more than 300 heads of sheep when as many as 20 armed settlers attacked him and his livestock. The shepherdman immediately called his two brothers for help. In the meantime, an Israeli army force showed up and began to look for the shepherdman. Upon hearing news of the assault and injuries, Palestinian villagers rushed to the scene to defend their neighbors. But instead, they clashed with the Israeli army, which tried to keep them away from reaching the three men who had responded to the original call of help by the shepherdmen. Members of the World Council of Churches, who tried to provide protective presence to Palestinians from settler attacks, were present that day in Yanun and witnessed part of what had transpired.
We arrived here to the valley and we heard some shooting in the other side of the valley and saw three fires around the valley as well. I think the most important thing is that one of them that were injured before we arrived was kept from medical attention. They said that they wouldn't let the ambulance, Red Cross and Red Crescent were here. The army wouldn't let the ambulance go there because they wanted everyone to leave. So they kept him with no medical attention for 3 hours.
Adwan Rajah says the Israeli army was downright covering the actions of the Itamar settlers.
They held both his hands and tried to tie them behind his back. He, of course, did not accept and resisted this. They hit him on his arm here and once on his side. They then threatened him with a gun and forced him to sit down on the floor. They tied his hands and handed him over to the settlers, who then attacked him.
Ibrahim's wounds are still visible. He had been hit by the back of the rifle by an Israeli soldier upon asking about the fate of the shepherdman, his brother. In light of settler repeated violence, many villagers in Yanun say they feel insecure and many opt to sleep in nearby villages. UNICEF says the spike in settler violence against Palestinian civilians, including children, is now a major concern in the occupied Palestinian territories, including East Jerusalem. Last year alone, the number of settler attacks resulting in Palestinian casualties and property damage have increased by more than a third. Since 2009, it increased by nearly 150%. Human rights organizations say when it comes to settler attacks against Palestinians, the Israeli army has failed on three counts. First is to prevent the attacks from happening in the first place. Second is to respond to the attacks as they occur. And third, taking legal action against the perpetrators of the attacks. The village of Yanun is case in point. Reporting for Remember Palestine, Ibrahim Husseini, Yanun.
For additional perspective on this issue, well, we're joined by today's studio guest. And here's a man with a CV that most journalists would be happy to pass off as their own. A veteran of reporting from conflict zones across the globe and a reputation for unflinching journalism and documentary making. Phil Rees, it's good to have you here. We saw Ibrahim's piece there. You've wandered through these settlements, not Yanun in particular, but different ones. You've even made a program about this. Why are we talking about settlers when there are so many international conventions and resolutions that are supposed to be preventing this?
Well, they simply don't apply to those areas, and many of those settlers were from a town called Itamar, in your report. And yes, I've been to Itamar. I've spoken to the people there, and the dominant accent there, by the way, is a New York accent, because most of the people have come from the state of New York. And their attitude is very simple. They believe this is their land. They believe that the deed to that land comes from the Bible, and the mayor of Itamar, he took me up to the hills overlooking Nablus, that they call Shlem in their language, which is the ancient biblical name, and they say, this is our land, and this is our deed. A deed for this is in the book, because God said so, that they belong to us. And they simply regard the Palestinians. I asked the mayor, I said, well, what about the people living there? He said, well, they are just passers-by. Within the way that he looks at history, it's as if he exists in a time warp. He looks back 3,000 years and says, these people, don't belong here. They'll just, in the pages of history, they'll just be passing through to someone else because it is land that they own. So this is their mentality. They don't care about international standards, international law, or anything else.
The Israeli authorities have said actively, time and time again, we do not condone violence by settlers. You know, we bring the army in to maintain order. But this is the assumption that there are two sides with valid arguments in the midst of all this.
Well, indeed. I mean, one side is simply stealing the land of another. So it's hard to balance two sides. And moreover, one side is heavily armed. And indeed, settlers have legal right to carry arms. The Palestinians do not. So yes, if you look at these sort of places near Nablus, Yitzhar, Itamar, just around where we had that report, you will see the settlers carrying guns, driving around. And it's a deliberate attempt to try to break the will of the Palestinians to stay there. So let's not try and discuss rights of these people or that people. This is an occupation. And the settlers want the Palestinians to simply disappear. They want them to leave. And they will do anything in their power to make the life of the Palestinians so unbearable that they will leave at some point. So, you know, it's a deliberate attempt. And everything that tries to present it as a sort of balance between, you know, the Palestinians having their rights, somehow the settlers having rights to steal land, is, of course, a fiction. And Israel likes to pretend that in the occupied territories there is the semblance of normality, that there are courts, there is, you know, their military there is somehow an arbiter of different sides. No, it is a military occupation, and therefore violence is at its very core, because these people are living under the jackboot of a military of the military. Now, that can't, you know, there's nothing sort of normal about that in the first instance. So to actually try and put it through the prism of a normality where there are balanced rights is complete rubbish.
The idea then is that the settlers are doing something. Is it on behalf of the government? Because the government says no, but they support the right of these people to live where they choose.
Well, there's been a commission now, a government commission, the Levy Commission, that's reported that the Israeli government should now accept the legitimacy of these settlements. Well, you know, in reality, they do. I mean, in practice, they do. And I think there is another fiction there. I mean, ever since, certainly the Netanyahu government, I think, been in power now, 3 years, you know, it has encouraged, and it hasn't paid any attention, you know, even to the United States, when the United States, which gives them so much money and so much political support, even when they ask them to stop building settlements, the Israeli government basically ignores them. So at the moment, there is no, you know, it is another kind of lie. They're saying, oh, well, we are trying to sort of control this. And actually, no, I think there's a deliberate policy to basically settle more and more people in what they regard to be the lands of Judea,
Make
Samaria.
Any kind of resolution almost impossible. Phil, stay with us. We're going to come back to you in a minute. So the international community, well, we're hoping that they're slowly waking up to the fact that Palestinians have been consistently denied justice. And as you've been hearing there, our leaders sometimes look on rather impotently. This week's Global Resistance reminds us that not everybody is staying silent.
US nationwide activists gathered to process Tia Kreft's financial support of the Israeli occupation of Palestine. The group assembled in Chicago and marched to the offices of the Financial Services Organization to to demand pensions that do not invest in the occupation.
We stand together in New York, Chicago, and San Francisco because we are united, we are stronger, and our message rings louder.
The organization has invested into a number of companies directly linked with the Israeli occupation, such as Caterpillar, Motorola Solutions, Veolia, and more. Muslim Aid Australia has successfully secured another year's worth of monthly sponsorship for Palestinian orphans. Muslim Aid Australia's generous donors were able to provide access to education, medical checkups, and monthly food packages for the children. This also includes a fun day at Gaza Beach with a variety of entertainment and shows. Islamic Relief's 2012 Ramadan Palestine Appeal promises to double every donation made with the UK government's promise to match donations received in Ramadan pound for pound up to a total of £5 million. Donations can be made on the website www.islamic-relief.org.uk. We ask you to be generous this Ramadan, every second counts.
Joining us next, Professor Mazin Komsia. He's a researcher at no fewer than three Palestinian universities, no less. And he joins us over the internet to discuss the continued violations of residents' rights. Professor, it is so good to have you here. I'm still in the studio with my guest, Phil Rees. And the main question I was trying to get to the heart of is if these settlements are deemed illegal, why are we still talking about extremist settlement activities?
Yes, indeed. There's a problem with terminology here because the whole state of Israel, since its founding, has been a state of oppression, repression of the Palestinians. It is actually a colonizing state, and the Zionists themselves did not shy away from using this terminology of colonization in the early periods of their history, in the late 19th century and early 20th century. Most Zionist leaders, like Ben-Gurion and Herzl and Pinsker and others, described their activities as colonization. And they knew at the time that you cannot do colonization without repression. You cannot simply come and ask somebody to leave their house and leave their land peacefully and they would leave. You had to force the native people to leave their lands to create this thing called the Jewish state. So they knew this is what entailed, that it entailed violence. And the settlers, colonial settlers of today, are merely grandchildren of the same colonial settlers who ethnically cleansed 530 Palestinian villages and towns, who committed hundreds of massacres over the past six decades. So that's what we are dealing with here in the West Bank.
What's been the international reaction, and do you place much stock in government talks about stopping settlement building, freezing settlement buildings, and so on?
And today's news is that the Europeans and Americans are holding a conference on Syria because of the killing of people in Syria. I don't recall the Western countries, including the United States and England and France, insisting on holding a conference to deal with the violence that Israel inflicted on us, Palestinians. In the past 5 years alone, over 2,000 Palestinians were killed. Thousands more were injured. The single attack on Gaza just three or four years ago, ended up with 1,400 people have been killed, including most of them are civilians, and including 400 children. And the Western media and the Western governments did not say much about the subject. So I think we really need to be very suspicious of this notions of the quote-unquote international community, because we really have no international community that follows international law. We have a dominance of the Western United Nations system by America and a couple of allies, and those countries are themselves under the basically pressure from the Israel lobby in those countries.
My guest Phil has a quick comment for you, Professor.
Well, I mean, it's certainly
the fiction of international law, isn't it? That I think that's been presented in the media here, that somehow there is a balance, somehow that, you know, Israel and Palestine each have competing national ambitions and each have a right to pursue that. Yet only one can use violence to pursue that. Isn't that the basic problem?
Yes, I mean, from its founding, Zionism has been about having the bigger stick, about might makes right, not about basic laws or international law or human rights laws or any of these things. So I think it is very obvious that if we allow the system of might makes right to proceed, we will all be in bad shape. I personally think there's only two ways forward for us. Either we move in this direction of more violence and more atrocities, or we insist that Israel comply with international law. And to do that, we have to have the leverage. We have to have, you know, prepare ourselves and prepare our people and engage in resistance that is credible, that's effective, that will force this this aggressor to end its aggression.
Professor, very quickly, what's been the response from villagers who find themselves at the receiving end of this intimidation and this terror?
Well, I mean, generally Palestinians have survived over the past few decades relentless attempts to drive us away from our lands, even with the creation of the largest post-World War II refugee crisis. We still have 5.5 million Palestinians here. We are still attached to our land, and we still fight for it. And the Palestinians continue to persist on their land. I'm very optimistic on that front. And I don't think the Zionist project will succeed. It has already failed in its stated goal of ethnically cleansing all Palestinians from its land.
But isn't there the case being put forward, as Phil mentioned when we spoke earlier, that it becomes very difficult for villagers to remain under these circumstances? Because even if you want to put a political point across, not having access to water, not having access to free travel, not being able to attend your land or attend your animals, this has day-to-day implications for a man and his family.
Indeed. I mean, I myself, we did not have water here in the Bethlehem area for 3 weeks now, while the settlers coming from around the world, from Poland and Russia and America, Jewish settlers, are having swimming pools and having green grass and so on. This apartheid system that exists here does indeed look very bleak, but I need to remind you and remind ourselves that in South Africa under apartheid, there was a period like this where people thought it's very difficult to confront a country that's so powerful as white South Africa. And it used to be the biggest and strongest country in Africa, basically, at the time. And yet apartheid ended in South Africa. It ended because of local resistance and of international solidarity and cooperation, including boycotts, divestments, sanctions. So I encourage people to engage in these things. In Britain, around the world, people should stop any kind of dealings with this apartheid racist regime.
Never a truer word said. Thank you very much, Professor Mazneen Kamsir there, over the internet via satellite for us. Now, our poem for today is by Sana Sino, and it's a weekly segment we have here, so you're quite welcome to send in your own submissions. This week's, it's called We Will Rise.
I've been stripped of my hope, stripped of my land. They bulldozed my home and made me build one for another man. I had a flag in one, a stone in the other hand. With anger in my heart, I stood facing Israeli tanks. Like the man my mother raised, like the man that I am. I took my best shot, but they intercepted with a large bang. And I fell. I fell the fall of a Palestinian man. They separate me from my pride and pushed me on my knees. They looked me in the eye as they made my mother bleed. The echoes of her cries and the echoes of her screams resurrected the tides and the waves of the Dead Sea. These sick creatures are of another breed. These inhumane Zionists are of another breed. Through the barrels of his gun, They see her beg, they see her plead, but he turned the other way and his sniper locked on me. And I fell the fall of a Palestinian man. But like Zajin, the peaceful dove of Palestine, I will fly, I will rise far beyond the seventh sky. I will break free and soar through the lies, seeking truth, seeking the justice that is mine. I will stand, I will climb, I will spread my wings, elevate and rise. I will rise.
And Phil Rees, journalist, broadcaster and documentary maker, still in the studio with me. We just had an off-camera conversation where you say the demographics here in terms of settler population, in terms of the Palestinian population, it's going to be problematic for the government going forward.
Well, what the policies towards settlers has done is it's prevented a two-state solution emerging. Now, I think nobody is seriously talking about a two-state solution being feasible because of the way the settlers have built their land and all the roads and all the other aspects. So it has made a Palestinian state based on that something that can't really function. So then you've got to ask, well, what is going to be that? What is the solution? Well, should it be a one-state solution, as personally most of us would like to feel, where Jews and Muslims and Christians and share the holy sites together? Well, remarkably, that's even being discussed now by some people. Now, of course, in a democracy, that would mean equal rights to everybody there. But, you know, where is this going? I think people who really are concerned about Israel, I mean, people there, are really wondering where they can go, because they can't sustain an apartheid state as one big state there forever.
It will crumble. It will fall. It is not sustainable.
I think that there are genuine problems, and I think that there are politicians there who are seriously worried about the two-state solution not being able to work now.
And what happens next? I mean, can there be enough pressure exerted to make this work somehow?
Well, I think that, you know, clearly while the United States and while Israel is getting all the support and while it has all the guns and it has 200 nuclear weapons, of course, it believes that it can manage the massive changes that are taking place, the seismic changes taking place in the Middle East. But my view is that given the fact that a two-state solution isn't acceptable, given the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to be the dominant party in many of the countries surrounding Israel...
Could be problematic.
I think in the long term it will be.
Phil Rees, thank you so much. And of course, my heartfelt thanks to all of you for joining us on this edition of Remember Palestine. My gratitude to my guest and for you, most importantly, for tuning in. We're reminding the world that we all have Palestine in our hearts. Until next time.